All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if Dak Prescott or Jared Goff has more on the line this week.
And I've got another installment of the Emmy Award-winning That Dude's Dude.
Dun-dun-dun!
Hey, I ain't get a Golden Globe, but we start every day with a Whitlock. What you got today, big guy?
Oh, man, the Arizona Cardinals hiring of Cliff Kingsbury is not a football-sound decision. It's a prisoner-of-the-moment decision. It's a fad decision. It's the kind of decision-making that works in Hollywood or the music industry, but fails rather quickly in an industry that requires actual substance. The Cardinals hired Kingsbury because he's a tall Sean McVay, the Tom Cruise magazine cover boy of NFL coaches. In their press release announcing Kingsbury's hiring, the Cardinals bragged that Kingsbury is friends with McVay, and they called the Rams coach a genius. Keep in mind, McVay is being hailed as a genius, but not one person has called him a playoff winner as of this date. Sure. The NFC West has gone Hollywood. McVay, Kingsbury, and San Francisco head coach Kyle Shanahan are the new Rat Pack or Brat Pack. They're football's Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, and Sammy Davis Jr. Hollywood loves style, cares little for substance. Oh, the Beatles are popular. We'll make a knockoff TV show and music group called The Monkees. That's Hollywood since the beginning of time. Football doesn't work that way, not successfully. McVay and Shanahan are cute and cuddly and seen as quarterback gurus. So the Cardinals hired their fair-haired golden boy coach. Problem is, there's no reason to believe Kingsbury is going to be successful. None. Since 1986, Texas Tech has had four head coaches: Spike Dyke, Mike Leach, Tommy Tuberville, and Kingsbury. Only one of them finished with a losing record. Kingsbury. Yes, Kingsbury runs a quarterback-friendly offense, and he's likely going to be an asset for Arizona's young quarterback, Josh Rosen. But you don't hire NFL head coaches to coach one position or one player. This ain't basketball. It's not that easy. You have to worry about more than just making LeBron James happy. The best football head coaches coach their assistant coaches. That's the long-term sustainable winning formula. A football head coaches are adept at coaching the other grown men they work with on a day-to-day basis. The assistants coach the children, and the head coach arbitrates the disputes. That's what makes Bill Belichick Bill Belichick: his ability to lead his peers. The same goes for Nick Saban, Dabo Sweeney, and Urban Meyer. You know why the Rams haven't been able to fix their high-priced, all-star-laden defense? Because pretty boy Sean McVay can't coach Wade Phillips. Phillips, no matter how experienced and talented he is, needs to be coached. That's the head coach's job. Look at Hugh Jackson. He's a tremendous offensive mind. He knows as much about offensive football as anyone in the game. He failed as a head coach because he can't coach his coaches. That's the job. Kingsbury's a bad hire. He might have some initial success and improve the play of Josh Rosen, but I think the Cardinals will regret this hire within 3 to 4 years. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Football NFL analysts D'Angelo Hall and Sean Merriman. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yes, sir, sir.
Kingsbury, bad hire.
I know you got trust issues. I could tell. It just came out and yet it does. Despite the fact that you're 50-plus years old and you're super single still, I know you got some trust issues. But dang, can you give him enough rope to hang himself with instead of saying...
What'd they give him at Texas Tech?
Look, at Texas Tech, he had a top...
He hung himself.
No.
He got fired. Well, he hung himself.
He also showed his greatest attribute, which is, I'm an offensive mind. Top 16 offense every single year he was there. Now, to your point, to your criticism, he must coach others. He must hire the right coaches. He must hire a tremendous defensive coordinator like Sean McVay did. But if you look at what he's there to do, it's twofold. One is to bring that offensive genius, and two, fix Josh Rosen, who had the worst quarterback rating of all quarterbacks and who is also the can't-miss prospect in terms of being NFL ready. So if you bring him into the fold, you're saying, in this copycat league, this should work. 7 of the 8 coaches remaining in the playoffs right now are offensive-minded, and half of them are former quarterbacks like Cliff Kingsbury. They all are cut from the same cloth. And you can't argue with those results. You can't argue with that success. And if this is a guy who's being respected and lauded by not only that group of people and those people who have faced Texas Tech, but even his former players, Patrick Mahomes is swearing by Cliff Kingsbury.
I would too.
Well, hey, look,
if I was a player.
Well, the success is why he swears by him. And look, at A&M.
What success?
At A&M, he helped Manziel become an Heisman Trophy winner. Like, if you just look at the individual cases, they're saying, we have another individual case for you. It's called Josh Rosen, Arizona Cardinals. I support this hire, and I think it's going to work.
If you bring in a coach that is 8-5, 4-8, 7-6, 5-7, 6-7, where's the success? I don't get it. Whenever you let go a Steve Wilks. So Steve Wilks was my defensive back coach when I played with the Chargers. So I know him as a person. So anytime you get rid of a first-time head coach after 1 year, there's normally a dispute with the organization. And since I know Steve Wilks, I know that wasn't the case. This is why you have a problem with people, with the gripe with people having a problem with African-American coaches and why they aren't having the opportunities. You get rid of a guy after 1 year and you bring in this. If you bring
in coach one person.
If you bring in Urban Meyer, if you bring in Nick Saban, or someone who has a winning record and a long history of a winning record, nobody complains. But if you get rid of a first-time head coach after 1 year, after one season, and you bring in one coach to coach one player, this is where the gripe comes from. I think it's a horrible decision. Not only for 3 or 4 years, I think it sets back the organization longer than that, because even if you give this guy a chance to be there 3 or 4 years, you're still going to have another 3 or 4 years to build. So they probably are setting this organization back at least by 5 years. I think it's a horrible decision.
Yeah, and my problem isn't even with Cliff Kingsbury. My problem is with the Arizona Cardinals, because, like you said, they're bringing him in to coach one position. If he was an offensive coordinator, bam, I don't have a problem with it. But you're asking this guy to coach men, coach grown men, some that probably he won't have the respect of some of those guys walking in that door. One, from just the way he handled the whole USC situation. And two, just like you said, his record doesn't show me that he deserves this. Ooh. And that's what it comes down to at this point. Some of these guys who are getting head coaching jobs don't necessarily deserve the opportunity. And that's all I want. I want to see guys who deserve the opportunity to be a head coach that chance.
You're right. He doesn't. And make it even worse, everyone's trying to go with the trend right now because Sean McVay is having.
But you know what? Let me cut you off real quick. I don't even think this has anything to do with Sean McVay.
Oh,
I think
they
did put it in the press conference, but I think that this has more to do with Patrick Mahomes and the success he has had since coming into this league.
They better move his arm to Arizona.
You know what I mean? Because they're saying Cliff Kingsbury is this quarterback whisperer or this great quarterback guru. I mean, you got Pat Mahomes, who I feel like is that anomaly. The baseball kid who can throw it all kind of ways, strong arm, athletic, gets it mentally. But some of the other guys he's coached, Case Keenum.
Had his moments.
Davis Webb.
What?
And Johnny Manziel, never thought was a pro-style quarterback. But to me, it's just a college gimmicky style where we can compile all these numbers. Mm. But at the end of the day, I still haven't taught you how to read a defense.
I'm just going to tell you what the issue is going to be. And again, they talking about the grown men with big contracts on the field is one thing.
Yeah.
But now you have grown men with big contracts in the assistant coaching pool. And so they're going to have to go out and spend some money on a real defensive coordinator with some NFL experience. And he's going to be the boss of him. And trust me, that NFL defensive coordinator, I don't know who it is. He's not going to respect Kingsbury. Yeah. Kingsbury can't tell him nothing. Man, you don't know nothing about this game over here in the NFL. That's a nice little gimmick offense you ran in the Big 12, and it put up some numbers. But over here in this league, you know nothing. And so, again, the head coach has to coach the assistant coaches, and I just don't see it happening.
And you put up numbers, but you still don't.
Win.
Wow.
You don't win. You don't win. And I'm hearing that he's one of those kind of guys. I had a guy like this in Atlanta, Bobby Petrino, who cared nothing about the defense. He was strictly offense. And a lot of the beef with me and Coach Petrino, how it went down, when we still had Michael Vick and he was still considered on our roster. He wanted me to go over there and work with the offense, Bobby Petrino. I did. I was running routes all offseason, was feeling good. Mike Zimmer was my defensive coordinator. Hugh Jackson actually was the offensive coordinator under Bobby Petrino. So this offense was slated to be pretty darn good. So they would let me run routes. I was feeling excited. I was a young kid, one of the fastest guys in the league. And so when I went and finally said, well, Micah got in trouble. So once that went down, I said, Coach, I kind of want to just focus on defense. Oh, he flipped the script. He, at that point, everything I did, he found a way to pick at it. He would walk past me sometimes and not speak. I mean, he just became a different person. And hearing Baker Mayfield talk about Cliff Kingsbury and his relationship with him after going out there as a freshman and competing and getting hurt and then feeling like after I got hurt, Coach Kingsbury never said a word to me. He would walk past me. He would do this. If you're on that defensive side of the ball, almost like any given Sunday, you can't have one side without the other side.
Okay,
and that will create a divide in that locker room.
Let me hit you with the D'Angelo. Let me cut you off. Okay, I got three things that I'm going to smoke all three of y'all right now. I got it out. First one is you brought up a losing record, right? Five of his six seasons at Texas Tech. You did, right?
Yep.
And I wonder who in NFL history had a losing record five of their first six seasons.
And I wonder who won two Super Bowls with the Giants.
As head coach. I wonder who that was. Bill Belichick. Okay, so no opportunity to get – oh, yeah, we should give you another
chance.
Oh, I'm not done. I got another one for you. Here's some smoke. The four teams right now that are still playing in the playoffs are Big 12 offenses. Chiefs, Rams, Saints, and then the Bears should be playing, but damn it, the field goal kicker.
Man, that ain't no Big 12 offense because they score
points. Okay, this is just
the Saints.
This is just by the X's
and O's.
I'm gonna
let you keep going.
Okay, and then last but not least, Sean McVay does not focus in on defense, to your point. He has Wade Phillips to do just that, and it's worked just fine for the Rams
got a
and
problem
for the former coach of the year.
They can't stop the run. The number one element you have to do, they can't stop the run.
Do the Rams have a problem?
They have a problem defense.
Sean McVay has been there is a problem.
And we're going to see this weekend what happens.
But see,
I want to go on the Belichick deal. Did you just hear me say everybody that coached at Texas Tech since 1986 has won, except for one person? Everybody that coaches for the Browns has been a failure. Bill Belichick, fine.
Schottenheimer was not a failure. Don't do that.
What?
Okay, I'm just saying, not everybody. Just let's keep it real.
That was 40 years ago when Marty had success.
It counts.
The Browns organization kills coaches. Bill Belichick's resume, having coached with Parcells and the Giants and having won Super Bowls, it's hard to second guess.
I won't even have to say it's comparable to Bill Belichick's. But it's in the world of give the guy a chance. It's in the world of fix Josh Rosen. It's in the world of your offensive
line. Make him learn it. Come be an OC in the NFL first.
Yeah, it's just too
it's different. It's so many other opportunities, so many other coaches. Why go over everyone's head that's in this pool right now to go get a college coach that has no successful winning season?
This is bad decision-making.
Yeah.
The general manager drafted Josh Rosen, and the general manager's all in on justifying that pick.
Yes. Yeah.
And so now – so the other 52 dudes in that locker room are going to be like, well, hold on, what about me?
Mm-hmm.
What about the entire team?
You fixed the quarterback, you fixed the offensive line, you fixed the receivers, you fixed the offense, and that could complement the defense. Y'all stop that acting like that's not complimentary football right there. Most important position getting fixed. You can't have the worst quarterback rating at your offensive quarterback
There's
position.
There's other ways to fix
and
it.
And I'm going to be interested to see how he coexists with that team as a leader of men in that locker room. That is what I can't wait to see.
And can you guys please stop disrespecting the process and get out of this archaic mindset that you got to be a former coordinator or you got to have some
believe that.
Okay. Well, Merriman was
just
saying
have to win. That's all I'm saying.
You want to see some guys with no head coaching experience? Doug Peterson, Sean McVay, Matt Nagy, and Frank Reich. Oh, are all those guys still playing in the playoffs? Right, look at this.
I said that. Been around football.
He made it to the pros.
Coaching in the league.
Sean McVay didn't even go pro. At least Cliff Kingsbury was a pro player. Like, y'all just, I just say it like I started off with. Give the guy enough rope to hang himself with.
Again. Right? Make sure you just say hang himself again. Because he hung himself at Texas Tech. And he's getting the rope. Arizona's going to give him the rope. Same as Texas Tech. Time for a couple of big stories. Whitlock and Wiley, D'Angelo Hall, and Sean Merriman are back. Let's move to Cleveland, where the Browns reportedly hired a new head coach today. elevating offensive coordinator Freddie Kitchens to the top job after he oversaw an excellent rookie year by Baker Mayfield. But Kitchens actually leapfrogged Greg Williams, who took over after Hugh Jackson was fired and led Cleveland to their best season in years. I guess I'm going to stay on the negative train. I don't like this hire.
You don't like this one?
No,
give it to me.
I don't get – why would he jump over Greg Williams? I don't get it. The Greg Williams finished 5-3. They finished 5-2 down the stretch. What more did Greg Williams need to do to get this job? Why give it to Freddie Kitchens? He seems a little
green,
inexperienced and green to me. I don't like the hire.
Freddie Kitchens served as the Browns' interim offensive coordinator for the final 8 games. When did Baker Mayfield play his best football? We gave a lot of credit to Greg Williams, a defensive-minded coach, a defensive coordinator. Greg Williams was just checking in on it. Hey, Freddie, what you doing with Baker? It's looking good. Talk to me later. And then left that room, went to the other side and said, help me, defense, because Baker out there balling. And Baker was balling because of Freddie Kitchens. So I love this hire again. Look at my positivity starting to rule. There's also an organizational decision that sometimes you need the older, wiser individual to call timeout for you. I like Baker Mayfield. Met Baker Mayfield when he first came out. He was doing his Facebook videos and all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's different. But, hey, you're the number one overall pick. Do you. But his energy hasn't changed from college. Like, the maturity, face of the franchise, quarterback energy, whatever that is, even though I love an arrogant player, it hasn't changed. And I think this is the organization saying, I love you, Greg Williams. You deserve a lot of credit for what you did, stabilizing this ship after the fire of Hugh Jackson. However, we got to bring Baker Mayfield back. And I know you know where the bodies are buried, and he has this kind of relationship with you where he feels like he could go out there and be risque. I need Freddie to get this guy back, not only to playing great football like he did, but bring the personality a notch back so we can see him mature.
See, I think Freddie would have more opportunity to do that as the offensive coordinator, as the head coach now, like we just talked about. As a head coach now, you have to basically, you're responsible for that whole team. Yeah. Every person on defense, every person on offense. You know, I'm with you, Wick. I kind of thought Greg Williams should have got this job because I thought this staff did a great job after that whole Hugh Jackson and who was it, Ty Haley?
Yeah,
that whole fiasco. I thought they did a great job, and I thought a lot of that had to do with the leadership from Greg Williams, and it trickled on down. I was a guy who thought, man, Freddie Kitchens, y'all giving him the offensive coordinator? Yeah, he called, you know, they said he called plays in the 4th preseason game. And I joked like, heck, our coaches used to let us call plays if that's qualifies him to be a coordinator. But he actually did a very good job. And so you're taking a guy who already was taken out of his comfort zone as a position coach and told to be an offensive coordinator who had all that responsibility, which he did a good job. And now you're going to give that man even more responsibility and say, hey, let's make you the head coach now. I just think it doesn't give him a fair chance, I think.
I agree with this hire for one. You know, Greg Williams is a great defensive coordinator. He doesn't have the temperament to manage a team. You know, you have coaches that are great coordinators, and they move to head coaches, and they're not good. I mean, we love Wade Phillips, but Wade Phillips just wasn't that coach to move on and manage that many personalities. He's just not that type. For one, Greg Williams have too much of a past for them to deal with. You know, with the whole bounty stuff and everything. They got over it. But now you're putting a guy at head coach who had to manage the entire team. You know, he has to go over to the wide receivers. He can't stay over on the defense side of the ball and just run those drills and correct the defense. Now you got to manage all those personalities. He didn't have the temperament. I love defensive-minded coaches as a head coach, but sometimes it just doesn't work out for the team across the board.
See, I disagree. I felt like that Cleveland team needed a guy like Greg Williams.
You're right.
After coming from a guy like Hugh who was so easy going, hey, you don't have to practice today, man. Let the guys, if they want the day off, let them have the day off. Greg Williams ain't about that life. Hey, look, if you ain't practicing, you ain't playing, period. And so they needed that toughness. That was part of the conflict, it felt like, from watching Hard Knocks. Ty Haley believed, hey, this is how we did it. This is how you win games. Heck, you got to teach these guys in Cleveland how to win because they have no clue.
Well,
right?
Let's go with Whitlock's point.
At this point, he should still be on the staff. He's
not on the staff, though.
He should be.
Yeah,
one of Whitlock's evergreen points about the Cleveland Browns is Why are we talking about Baker Mayfield and his personality and not enough about him breaking Russell Wilson's rookie passing record?
Peyton Manning's passing record.
So why aren't we talking about that? It's because this thing got a little out of control. Gas meets fire, and it's a problem. Baker Mayfield and Greg Williams together forever is not the solution. So I like the Freddie Kitchens hire.
All right, to another big story, this one in Denver, where the Broncos have reportedly tapped Bears defensive coordinator Vic Fangio as their next head coach. John Elway's last hire, Vance Joseph, lasted only two seasons. And in an odd twist, former head coach Gary Kubiak will return as the offensive coordinator. The Broncos have been in the wilderness since Peyton Manning left after winning the Super Bowl in 2015. Look, John Elway's my favorite NFL player of all time. I'm a bit of a John Elway homer. I like this hire. I like getting a veteran, a defensive coach, and then to me bringing Gary Kubiak back to run the offense. I think this is the perfect marriage. I think they got it right. Love this hire.
I love this hire too. Different reasons. Seven of the eight remaining coaches are offensive minded, right? So let's zig when everyone else is zagging. Let's actually start thinking about how we're going to stop these offenses instead of trying to just be the copycat next one in that fold. So I respect that uniqueness. Beyond that, defense is still this team's identity, and that's where their money is as well, right? So let's double down on that defense. Get somebody who's going to run this team and run that defense. Yep. And then let's bring back someone who has Super Bowl experience with us, and now let him be the offensive coordinator and fix things on that side. So it's almost a flip model of what we're seeing from most teams, most coaching staffs, which is trying to get the head coach to look offense. They're looking defense, and then they're getting someone with experience and success to do the offense. I like it.
You know, we had a general manager in with the Chargers that named A.J. Smith, right?
You remember
A.J. Smith.
Oh,
you know, A.J. Smith did a hell of a job drafting guys. I believe he had one of the best eyes when it comes to seeing talent, right? I mean, he can draft the best talent, but he could not manage a team. You know, John Elway's had that reverse effect where he's just not bringing in the right people in the past, but he does really well at managing a team. I think he got it right this time. I think for the first time since he came over and as a GM that he got right, he's bringing in the right people. This is a great hire.
Yeah, and let me tell you why I also think it's a great hire and why he got it right. He got it right because Vic Fangio is one of the best defensive minds in the game today. He doesn't get a lot of credit. He's an older gentleman. He's 60 years old. And so a lot of people thought that the head coaching opportunities for him had already passed. But he's going to bring in as a head coach a guy who's not going to have an ego. He's been around this block a long time. Mm. And he's going to let Gary Kubiak. To me, this feels like a co-head coaching job. For me, it feels like Gary Kubiak is going to solely have that offense. He's going to have input into who he needs on his roster offensively. And I think Vic Fangio will do the same thing on defense. He'll have sole control of that defense. He won't have to necessarily worry about the offense. He'll have a guy because Vic, you know, even though he's been around the game a long time, it's his first time being a head football coach. He'll have a guy in his offensive coordinator, Gary Kubiak, who knows how things work. Yep. You know what I mean? Who can help him, who he can kind of, you know, talk to about different situations that arise. But I don't think anything that'll happen through the course of this season or his tenure as a head coach, you know, it'll be anything new because Vic, like I said, he's been around the block so much. But to me, this definitely feels like a co-head coaching type of situation. And I love it because I don't see egos getting in the way of these two guys
and I think
being
that's,
successful.
I think that's needed here. For clarity, Elway has had, this is what, his fourth coaching hire. And two of the previous three were successful. I mean, you won a Super Bowl, you lost a Super Bowl, and then Vance Joseph. We're going to let that go, right? So, he always done it right at coaching. He hasn't done it right at the quarterback position.
Well, who's picked the quarterback?
Elway's doing here is just going with experience. They went with an inexperienced guy last time, and it blew up in their face.
Yeah.
He's had success with experienced head coaches going back to that
one. And one more thing. We got 20 seconds here. Stop being so premature. And look at here. Raiders, Rams, Chiefs in the same division with you. Offenses are coming.
I mean,
you got six games on the schedule in 10 that are like, you got to deal with even Gruden and Derek Carr. You're not going to have a great night of sleep that night. You got to deal with Gruden and all those, the schematics of it. And then the Rams and Chiefs, you got to go do that.
Whitlock and Wiley joined by D'Angelo Hall and Sean Merriman. It's time for That Dude's Dudes. Marcellus, what you got?
I got some love for the big uglies out there in the trenches, you know, the stars of the team who don't get enough shine. So let's show some love to Whitlock and myself. Let's go with the Dat Dudes Dudes of the Week. Number three, we're going to go with the Chicago Bears linebacker Leonard Floyd. The Bears lost to the Eagles, we all know. Three tackles, one sack right here. Leonard Floyd bounces off Jason Peters and gets to Nick Foles for the sack and the celebration.
Yes, sir.
Now, Jason Peters is looking inside at the snap. Uh-oh, that's not good because you're on the road. We get that. But then they get to their set point. And as you can see, Jason Peters feeling good about himself. A little square, but hey, we still got it a good set point. Now, Jason Peters continues to do some work. What an expectation of his quarterback, Nick Foles. I know what you know what to do. You see that lane right there? Please step up in there. The real Nick Foles, please step up. But he does not. So now Jason Peters is like, man, what you doing, dog? Carson Wentz, anyone. But no, he forgets that he has to continue on the block no matter what Nick Foles does. And now it's time to ride that horse. It's time to get up on that horse, buck that pony, and bring him down to the ground safe and sound. No NFL issue there. Leonard Floyd, our third Dat Dude of the Week. Now let's go to my team, the Chargers. Number two, defensive end Melvin Ingram. Ball
number
out.
Number two,
lightning strikes. I'm going to tell you why. You can see Melvin Ingram here had a monster game. Seven tackles, two sacks. Used a quick spin move to get to Lamar Jackson for the second. And I need that thing and let the board know that. Chargers. Melvin Ingram right here. Used a quick spin move to get Lamar Jackson. Oh, when you stab and punch me, please put it in the proper position. If not, I will use that against you and put my power leg down and position myself for some lightning to hit it. And then I'm about to spin up out of that. Use all your leverage against you because you had a bad stab move. Woo. You see Melvin Ingram right there. Textbook, as Tupac would say, picture perfect. I'll make a perfect picture. He is hitting that boy with every level of the textbook on the spin move. Now you can see right here, they get into a little huddle.
Into each other.
Hey,
sweet.
Help me out, dog. Let me know. How are we going to block Melvin Ingram? Are we not? Oh, okay. Now we try to recover. Melvin Ingram hits him with a dead arm. Dead arm means just twist the upper body, give him nothing to hit, no leverage, no contact point. Lamar Jackson, take that. Melvin Ingram, high step, L.A. Chargers. Melvin Ingram, number two.
That you dude need to teach him that lights out move.
It's coming this week.
There it is. Now let's go with number one, Whitlock. Colts, offensive guard, Quentin Nelson. Clown suit clowny. Boy, he's about to hit him. Now we know he's first team all pro and pro bowler as a rookie. Nicknamed Earl Grey. Y'all figure that out. I love that nickname. It's amazing. J.J. Watt does well to leap and swat Andrew Luck's pass, but let's rewind and show you what really happened. Y'all watch what Quentin Nelson in there doing?
Finish him.
Whitlock and me wrestling over this pork chop. Let's see how this goes down. Oh, you try to hit him with the college silky swim, we call it. This is the danger of doing a swim move. If it doesn't clear, oh, my God, you're going to get put in ICU. And Quentin Nelson's like, thank you, helmet, for blocking that swim move. So now he has him in this position. No leverage, Jadeveon Clowney. Defibrillators are out.
Clear.
Rampart, code blue. Oh, my God, Quentin Nelson. Nate, this is athleticism. That leg is dangling, but his eyes are big. They bug-eyed because he knows what's about to happen. Clown suit Clowney. He is about to get him, and Quentin Nelson will finish this. Jadeveon's doing all he can, but there's nothing you can do
Mayday.
To avoid what's
down goes Clowney.
And now
down goes Clowney.
The yin-yang symbol. Look at them boys. Yin-yang twins out there. Oh, my God. Earl Grey, I see you, brother. Quentin Nelson, you a beast. I'm glad I'm retired. You are number one Dat Dude of the Week. Ooh,
pancake special.
Man. Yeah, right, thank you, buddy. My sons. Great job. Let's move to L.A. Coliseum, where the Rams host the Cowboys in a divisional round showdown Saturday night. Dak Prescott has been facing doubters all year, and a win this week could go a long way towards silencing his critics. And while nobody doubts Jared Goff's abilities throwing the ball, another early exit from the postseason could put a serious ding in his reputation. I actually think Jared Goff has more to lose in this game than actually Dak Prescott.
Okay.
Dak Prescott is supported by the owner, Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
Sean McVay did not draft Jared Goff.
Uh-huh.
And Jared Goff has had a poor finish to the regular season. And if he bows out of these playoffs with a poor performance, Sean McVay may not, maybe next year, but Sean McVay can wiggle himself loose from Jared Goff and point the finger at Jared Goff. I think there's more to be won and lost in this game for Jared Goff than Dak Prescott.
Interesting take. I won't argue against it, but I do have a different side and different perspective. I'm looking at Dak Prescott, And I say there's more for him and more meaning in this game for him in terms of the positives and negatives. Think about it. Jared Goff, he's already been through the fire. He got beat up. His first seven games, his rookie year, oh, my goodness, 0-7, you're a bust. And then he just has backed that up with consecutive years of almost being an NFL MVP, playing at that highest level. So he's already been through the fire. Dak is still in the fire, not been through it, still going through it. And if Dak Prescott goes out there and plays well, people are going to say, okay, it's time to eat a little more crow from you, Dak. But if Dak goes out there and messes up, people like myself and others who are critical of Dak will sit there and say, told y'all, I told you, this is all we've been waiting for. So I think there are lower lows for Dak Prescott. That's why I think this game means more for him.
Yeah, I don't think neither one of these guys are in fear of not being their team's quarterback moving forward long term.
Agreed.
But with that being said, I just think the pressure's on Dak because more people don't believe in Dak than I think Jared Goff. I think Jared Goff has a stable of people, especially people in the media, who believe he is a elite quarterback or right on that cusp. And I was kind of hesitant to give him that moniker right now because the way he's ended the season. You know, it's been plays out there on the field where I've seen that just take the check down. Just take the check down, where he's just being a little too greedy, a little too greedy. And he was getting away with it earlier in the season. And now he's not getting away with it. Teams are starting to say, hey, look, we know Jared and this offense wants the home run ball. So we're going to put two guys on that, leave this guy open, and he's just not being patient enough. And so he still has a lot to prove to me for me to really buy the hype. But I think the masses have already bought the hype of Jared Goff and Sean McVay fixed him. I still think, like you said, it's still something left I need to see. I need to see him go out there and really consistently do it. But I think it's more pressure on Dak because I think it's more people don't believe that Dak can beat them throwing the ball all over the field.
What pressure on Dak? Dak is an average quarterback. I said it before. I said it 10 more times. What? No, I agree. I agree with Whit, right?
Smoke.
Jared Goff is in a lose-lose situation because you go out and beat the Dallas Cowboys, you beat Dak Prescott. Okay, you beat Dak Prescott. Whoopee, congratulations. You lose to him, whoopee, congratulations, because you know Dak Prescott is not going to win or lose the game for the Dallas Cowboys. It's going to be because everybody else. It's going to be because of that defense. It's going to be because Amari Cooper came out and made some spectacular plays. It's going to be because the coach went out there and called some spectacular plays. It's not, the game is not going to be won or lost because of Dak Prescott anyway. They're not even in the playoffs because of Dak Prescott. They're in the playoffs because of everyone else. So Jared Goff is in a lose-lose situation no matter how you see it. The pressure's on him.
Yeah, the pressure is on Dak. Trust me. And I understand what you're saying, Merriman. Agree. But think about this. Anyone who has criticism of Jared Goff has to remember what happened this year and really dive into the details. It's as simple as this. Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
Roommate, best friend,
safety
security
valve.
Blanket, yeah. Safety yep. valve goes yep. down in Seattle game. What happens to now? You look at Jared Goff, he stops taking the short intermediate route, mm-hmm. which Cooper Kupp loved that real estate.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he just started going over top because he's trying to compensate. A lot of young quarterbacks feel that pressure. He's an NFL MVP caliber quarterback who's trying to keep those numbers up and keep this offense rolling. But you just lost a key part of that offense and that engine. So I just think that Jared Goff is fine no matter his lowest of lows because he lost something that
was amazing. If he stinks it up, again, he's not even the face. He might be third or fourth on the totem pole in the face of the Rams. After Gurley, certainly after McVay, Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
He's easier to walk away from. Jerry Jones has made it crystal clear who his quarterback is, ownership. And so it's great to have fan and media support, but fans are fickle, and so is the media. Jared Goff goes out here and stinks it up, and they don't play well. Trust me, we're going to be on this show lighting a fire under his rear end.
But we've seen Jerry, too, come out and say, hey, this guy's going to be here. He's going to be here. He's going to be here. And then the guy's cut next season. And so, Jerry can love him up all he wants. You're right. I mean, I feel like you're right that Dak's not going anywhere. But, I mean, we've seen Jerry backtrack before. And
yeah, so I'm living proof.
We shall see.
What it done.
Time to put on our thinking caps. D'Angelo Hall and Sean Merriman, Virginia Tech and Maryland's finest.
Lord, Pop 48 here. Up here.
Lord. As you all know, I'm a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer, Columbia's very own Marcellus Wiley here. Mm. So we're going to take a deeper look at a big issue in sports. Got a special cap for our Columbia grad, Darnell. Bring it on.
Slimmer Darnell, little yeah, Darnell.
Yeah. In that gym.
That resolution.
Good, yeah.
See you, bro.
New year. All right, let's move to Pittsburgh.
Shall we?
Where the Steelers season may be over, but the drama around Antonio Brown is still growing. Since it surfaced that Brown was actually benched for the Steelers' final game, former Steeler Ryan Clark has been highly critical of his old teammate, and yesterday revealed that Brown cussed out former defensive coordinator Dick LeBeau, one of the most respected coaches in the league. Clark also took his old coach Mike Tomlin to task for allowing the whole situation to get so out of hand this season. All right. I've been critical of Mike Tomlin in the past, and they certainly have, I think, some discipline issues in Pittsburgh. But I can't put this all on Mike Tomlin. I think this organization, if you really understand the history of it, going all the way back to Chuck Knoll, they don't empower their head coaches in Pittsburgh. That organization's run from the very top down, and the coaches aren't nearly as powerful as a Bill Belichick is in New England, Pete Carroll in Seattle. The coaches don't control things, and I think in this era of football where the players make so much money, the coach has to have more control and power if he's going to fix these kind of dysfunctional issues. And so I think it's going to be very hard. They can let go of AB, but there will be new problems in Pittsburgh because of the way the organization is set up.
Yeah, it's a leaky water hose. Grandma used to always say it. Once you got one leak, baby, stop trying to patch that thing up. Save up and get a new one, baby. You know why? Because you patch this up, leak over here, leak over here. You trade Antonio Brown, you still got an organizational issue to deal with. So I can agree with you there. I don't understand the shots at Mike Tomlin, constantly the shots at Mike Tomlin, where they're coming from, how this even morphs into a story more about him and his lack of control. And I will answer it in several objective measures and in story. One, if we're measuring dysfunction by Super Bowl championships, not dysfunctional in Pittsburgh. Mike Tomlin's one of the seven active head coaches with Super Bowl ring. If we're judging just by wins, you give your organization a chance. Second most winning coach behind Bill Belichick. What? So where are we going with this? What is this about? Well, it just seems like there's a lot of drama coming out of Pittsburgh, a lot of issues. To what tune? To the tune of them still winning? To the tune of them still winning the Super Bowl?
Didn't make the playoffs.
They right. Yeah. Yeah, but he's never
That's
had a losing record. He never had a losing record. So I just want to make sure we understand what power looks like and true control from the head coaching position looks like. Bill Parcells, I'll give you this story. No one denies Bill Parcells was an amazing coach, great coach, and had total control, correct?
Oh, yeah.
But these eyes right here saw Bill Parcells get hands put on him in practice from one of his own players, Antonio Bryant. Now, I only tell this story at times because I love when people always say, well, this coach is losing control, losing power. I was like, even the best of them go through this. Antonio Bryant and Bill Parcells had a war of words that turned into a war of actions. And this is pre-social media, so I guess it didn't exist. But it did. And then even as recent as Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl, to show his power, to show his control, he does the same thing Mike Tomlin did. Had to bench a star player in the most critical moment. So I don't know where you want to put Mike Tomlin in terms of having control, but I put him up there at the highest place with a Belichick, with a Parcells, and he has accolades to support. He deserves to be there.
Yeah, and the thing that's different about this situation is, say, a place like New England, stories don't necessarily leak out of New England. You know what I mean? You got to know who you're dealing with in this Pittsburgh locker room. These guys are social media darlings. They love it. You know, they're always on their social media telling their story or what's going on or this and that. In New England, you don't have a lot of that. But these guys, to me, some players you just can't control. Antonio Brown, I don't know him that well, but as his star has risen, he's changed. He's wanted to be treated more like Ben, maybe. More like Le'Veon, maybe. And so at this point, do you have to move on from him? I think so, just because the relationship just feels like it's beyond repair. When you're benching one of your star players like that and guys on the team know the story behind why he's been benched, Guys might not want to fight with a guy like that and go to war and say, right. Hey, I'm believing in this guy. They're paying AB a lot of money. And the emergence of a guy like Juju, you got to get rid of this headache and you'll be all right.
That's a great point. You can spin it to us and us from a distance, yep. from our vantage point. In that locker room, you know it. And I don't care what you say, coach. I don't care how you clear it up. Forevermore, I know what happened there. And that may take some of my spirit away from fighting for it.
And, you know, I give Mike Tomlin this credit because he doesn't control the roster, right? You can bench a guy. You can say something to him. But when you pay Antonio Brown that kind of money, he going to be there. Ain't nothing you can do about it.
He going to be him.
Yeah, he going to be him. Mm-hmm. So once that happens and once the other players see Antonio Brown do something and the coach can't do anything about it, okay, now you're going to have Le'Veon Bell. Once Le'Veon Bell do something and you can't do nothing about it because he's franchised, whatever the case is, he's going to be there for that year, you can't do nothing about it. So to your point, there's a lot of patches that need to be filled, but it's not necessarily his job to do something about it because he doesn't control the roster, but he has put up with it for a long time.
But see, even to Witt's point, I didn't know some of the inner workings of that Pittsburgh organization. And so do you think, well, I think from the outside looking in, that Ben was kind of given this blessing to kind of do whatever he wants, have coaches fired. Yeah, have coaches fired, have coaches hired. You know, moving his position coach to the coordinator spot to call more passes for him.
I think Pittsburgh is a great place to coach because you're going to have longevity. They're going to be patient with you. They've had three coaches in 50 years, basically. That's great about it. But you're not going to have the kind of power yep. that other successful coaches have. And that puts you in a position where Big Ben, to me, is out of control. Le'Veon was out of control. Antonio Brown out of control. We looked at the offensive line. To me, get out of control this season, yes. taking pot shots mm-hmm. at Le'Veon yeah, Bell man. And talking about his money. Joey Porter, their assistant coach, out of control, getting yeah. on the field. Yeah.
Former assistant.
Yeah, former. Yeah, he's out and then even go back. This is what I'm talking about when Tomlin, lack of power. They installed Todd Haley as the offensive coordinator. That wasn't a Tomlin decision.
Yeah.
Dick Haley, Todd Haley's father, worked in the Steelers organization in the front office for a long time. That's why Todd Haley was brought back there. And so, and then even this year when it became to replacing Todd Haley, that was more of a Big Ben call, him elevating his quarterback coach and his boy. I'd never make excuses for Mike Tomlin. Because again, not making the playoffs unacceptable. Some of the decision making is unacceptable in my view. Some of the things he's done, stepping on the field and interfering with a kickoff return, some of it is on Tomlin, but a lot of it that's not talked about is situational in Pittsburgh. You got a coach that's had success but doesn't have the power of a successful coach.
You know, I see a parallel to one of your great points about Wade Phillips and what the Rams did defensively this year is you may have taken on too much and more than you can handle, right? But in personalities. And I'm thinking like Mike Tomlin, you say he doesn't have control of the roster and some of the coaching hires. I work with all of these guys in some form of capacity, whether it's in personal relationship or actually play with Todd Haley. Todd Haley, Joey Porter, Antonio Brown, Big Ben, and Le'Veon Bell on one team. It's too much fire, brother. It's just too much fire.
It's too
lucky the house is still standing. That's crazy. Yeah. And that's just a lot of personality. I'm not going to sit here and say I feel sorry for Mike Tomlin. I think he's done a marvelous job despite distraction. But part of their distraction is someone is not thinking about the personality, which is making this combustion.
We're joined now by Fox NBA analyst Iceberg Jim Jackson. All right, let's move to the NBA, where the Warriors easily blew out the Knicks last night. New York has long been rumored to be one of Kevin Durant's most likely destinations if he leaves in free agency this summer. And Knicks legend Walt Clyde Frazier says that if KD brings a title back to Madison Square Garden, it would put him on the same level as Michael Jordan and LeBron James. I completely agree with Clyde Frazier here. Mm. And I think same level is tough, but it puts him in that conversation. Mm-hmm. But Kobe was in this spot, I think, after Shaq left. When Kobe, by getting those additional two championships, elevated himself mm-hmm. greatly in the discussion of all-time greats. And if Kevin Durant, to me, goes to New York and brings the title there, I think he vaults past Kobe Bryant and puts himself where you can actually have a conversation about he and LeBron James. Not Michael Jordan, in my opinion, but LeBron James.
Boy, you crazy. No MJ, huh? No MJ, none, right? Just
new. No. Walt Frazier. We call this the two-hand tap. You ever say something and then someone just comes up to you and you're like, what'd I say? Bruce Bowen got the two-hand tap, right. You know, when Bruce Bowen was talking about Kawhi Leonard. And all of a sudden, ooh, it got really harsh for him. He got the axe. Kurt Warner has done this before, and Walt Frazier's trying to walk it back too, saying in the summer it didn't sound with the same energy as what he's saying now. Oh, you can enter the GOAT conversation. Before it's like, oh, you went somewhere, they didn't need you. Mm-hmm. And then, whoa, that's smoke. And I think that he's trying to walk that back. That said, golly, Kevin Durant is a mega baller, mega star, no matter which team he's on. Number one media market in the world is New York. We get it in our country. Why? Because they can sell the message better than anybody. What they're selling right now is, come here. And if you win here and we haven't won in 40-plus years, oh, my God, everything changes. Not so true. Same reason why they say that they're the mecca of basketball. A little archaic. No one's sitting there saying, I go to New York and that's where only ballers are. So for me, this is just a lot of mixed signals trying to get a guy in recruiting, but not keeping it thorough, not keeping it 100. Go to the Clippers if you really want to go somewhere where they haven't won.
Why do we always get back to the Clippers?
Because that's the best. That maximum impact in the NBA right now is a star going to the Clippers and winning championships.
Not true.
I agree with Walt from this. I think LeBron put himself in a separate category when he went back to Cleveland and won it, even though he had Kyrie and Kevin Love. He kind of separated himself by going back and doing that. For Kevin Durant to be able to go and do it, it won't be on his own because he's going to need two other people to help do it when he gets to wherever he goes, if he went to New York. So it would put him in a different category. But also what Walt said, an asterisk by his name, okay, which I think is the key here because the two he won in Golden State, and he might win a third, I don't know. I think you got to be careful with asterisks because in history – we can all put asterisks on something. I can say, well, when Bill Russell played, it was only eight other teams he had to play against, so the level of competition wasn't that good. Mm-hmm. I can say when San Antonio won it in 98-99, hell, it was a lockout season. We didn't play a full season. Or I can say the Houston Rockets back-to-back.
No Jordan.
So we can pick and choose how we want to put an asterisk on something, but all of those teams that won it had to do it in the time frame in which they play. And Kevin Durant just happens to be in a time frame where guys are more likely to jump ship, to go somewhere else and play in order to get a championship. Because would we look at Barkley differently if he had won it in Houston? Because he, even though he went at the end of his career, he went to chase a championship.
Yes, he did.
You know, but he didn't win it. So I think we got to be careful once we start talking about that because that puts you in a different frame in a different conversation.
Having said that, though, I don't get it, Marcellus. You think, honest to goodness, New York is the media capital of the world, even though Silicon Valley's trying to usurp him. Mm-hmm. But if he brings a championship to the Knicks, you don't think that changes the conversation about Kevin Durant significantly?
I think it will in terms of volume. Look, the messaging will be in a volume and a quantity that's just like it's going to elevate him because he's going to be in that conversation more so than any other place because it is the media market. But then we're going to dive into the details. Who else came with him? Like, to Jimmy's point, he's not doing it by himself, so who else is on that roster? It's almost like he has to go to a bare-bones roster and then he's going to get the proper respect. Because if he knows there were stars, then we're going to hear that conversation.
All he needs to be is the very best player on that
team. He's been that on the last two championships.
Yeah, there's an argument about Steph.
NBA MVP, finals.
The problem, they won it before. So his added value, you can't quantify it because they won it before. If he goes to New York, and let's say it's a guy that's right up underneath him in regards to his talent, but Kevin Durant is still the lead dog, you are going to look at him a little bit differently and say, you know what, you came to a place where we haven't won it since, what, 74? Yeah. So now that does elevate him in regards to how you look at can he carry a team and win a championship even with somebody else? The answer would be yes if he does it.
So let's don't kid ourselves. Scottie Pippen was a hell of a player
playing
alongside Michael. And like, Michael didn't do it all by himself. No, Scottie Pippen. And so I would give Kevin Durant a lot of credit and respect if he went to New York and won a title. Whitlock and Wiley.
And
Iceberg Jim Jackson. Iceberg. My favorite segment, Antisocial.
Big and.
Hold on, Big Swole.
Oh, Big Swole.
Big Swole.
Our social media manager.
Debo.
It was like he was an add-on.
Right, Big Swole. Come on now.
Darnell Smith is here to walk us through these Twitter streets. Darnell, tomorrow, raise that chair up. I think they got you a little low. Tomorrow. Not tomorrow. Right. Don't worry about it tomorrow.
Too many squats.
Too many squats.
Them LBs on it.
Right.
Stump.
What's popping?
Yeah, man, let's start with Deshaun Watson. Mm. The Clemson alum was on the sidelines at the national championship game on Monday night, and I can't believe what one radio host had to say about it. I know I'm going to sound like an old pawpaw, but seriously, Deshaun Watson is a starting QB in the NFL, and he couldn't dress better? You're not a corner or a wide receiver. You're a QB. You're a brand. But my man Deshaun kept it cool in his response. LMAO, my brand is pretty solid, Jared. Mm. I think I was very comfortable and chill to cheer on my university. Y'all like how Deshaun handle this strange criticism?
I do, and I don't get the criticism at all.
Yeah, you can't chill.
Because I love the way he's dressed because he looks so casual that I didn't even realize it's Deshaun Watson. Mm. He's not drawing attention to himself. He's keeping the spotlight on the actual Clemson players. I didn't get it at all.
Yeah, but DeAndre Hopkins, he needed the criticism. Looking like Uncle Jimmy over there.
Hell you were, DeAndre. I thought you were the fashion guru.
Nah, just kidding. I would have hit him with the apathy. I would have hit him with no response. Like, I can't respond to everything. But some people like to smoke in the response, so I get that. If you can't be casual at a sporting event, when can you? I hate when I go to Laker games sometimes, you know, in my rare free time.
You go to Laker games?
When they play the Clippers. And I'll be looking at, I'm looking at, one, the men. I'm like, why are y'all so suited and booted? And then the ladies in heels, I'm like, where y'all going?
It take a lot of energy to do a lot of that stuff to kind of get yourself up. I'm like, it took you about 2 or 3 hours just to go to a game. He looks comfortable.
Yes.
He's chilling. He's cheering on his team. I mean, what's the problem, bro?
Yeah, what's up?
I mean, you want him to come in with a three-piece on?
Yeah.
He's a kid, too. It's not exactly that long ago that he was on that team. There's still some teammates on there. He looks to me like a college kid.
Did Jared understand that it's 2019?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, Paw.
Listen, let me tell you something. We go to Mastro's and eat, right?
Yeah.
They play hip hop in Mastro.
Thank you.
What that tell you?
It's on.
What that tell
no
you?
No matter where you at.
Okay, you know what I'm saying?
It's
time
on.
It's
cracking.
On. That's right.
That's real.
I'm gonna add one last little piece. I mean, because again, I love this look. At least he ain't out here with some $300,000 gold chain on, trying to floss in front of a bunch of other college kids.
Right.
He looks like one of them.
Yeah, don't wear cheap gold. $300,000—that's you'll start a quarterback. You better be a million on your neck.
Yeah, like Jamarcus Russell out of the league. Go ahead. What's next, Darnell?
All right, man. I got a weird baseball story here for y'all. Indians pitcher Trevor Bauer got into a back and forth Twitter beef with an Astros fan and college student named Nicole Giles over the weekend. Mm. Now she's alleging Bauer took it too far, even complaining to the team's official Facebook page. Giles claims she blocked Bauer, but he continued blasting her in tweets, including one where Bauer exposed Giles for underage drinking. Not smart, kiddo. When you get put in a virtual body bag on Twitter, maybe just stop for the night. Just a half hour ago, Bauer posted some tweets defending his behavior as, quote, good-natured, but still apologized if it had unintended consequences. Do you think Bauer went too far in this whole scenario?
No, not really. This is what the mute button and block buttons are for. And both sides could have used them. I went kind of deep on this morning looking into it. It's not like there was a bunch of profanity getting tossed around. This was two young people, to me, on both sides that initially were flirting with each other.
Oh.
And then it spun out of control, in my opinion.
He got salty.
Yeah, man. Look, it's funny that when you see stories like this, to me, it's like only the adults should enter. And sometimes if you're underage, if you were, you can get tried as an adult if you come at me on social media, right? So as soon as you enter between the white lines of social media, it's on and cracking. Let's go back, back, back. And don't get mad when you take this L, because don't get mad at my ammunition, because you don't know who you messing with.
The problem is that I guess we are supposed to be the ones that defer and say, you know what, we can't fire back.
Right.
You know what I mean? Even when she blocked him, he kept going at her. He's like, no, I'm about to get at you. Yeah. I'm giving you all this heat right now. I do think he could have pulled back a little bit, but that tweet was pretty good, though.
That was great.
I mean, he got her on that one.
All right, what's next?
Let's talk Eric Reed, who got Twitter in a frenzy this season after claiming he was unfairly targeted for multiple drug tests because of his protests in association with Colin Kaepernick. Well, the NFL and NFLPA released a joint statement saying that an independent administrator refuted those claims, and NFL Network's Ian Rappaport even added. Sources said it was determined that Reed was drug tested fewer times than he publicly claimed. Whitlock, I know you got something to say about this. Let's hear it.
I just got a lot of Twitter off for Eric Reed.
Give him the last of the bottle.
Please. Eric Reed, get off Twitter, man. Get out of that Twitter matrix. The NFLPA and the NFL and Ian Rappaport all putting you on blast. Mm. Quit trying to be a victim, man, and just play football. Mm. Please.
Ooh, I can see the mist coming out that Twitter wrong. You mean that Twitter wrong. This mist coming out. I will say this, and this is why I always hesitated to support Eric Reed in this case, talking about unfair drug tests. There were years I only got tested once, maybe none, it felt like. Just like, man, they don't care about me. I got all these muscles. I guess they think I'm fat or something. Not good. Right. Then there were years, 10, 12 times. I'm like, man, what's going on? So when it's that random, I think it's random drug testing. I didn't believe Eric Reed from the beginning.
It was tough because when you first read it, you're like, oh, it makes sense because he gets back in the league. But now that, to me, the Players Association, when they jump in and they refute it, that's when it starts to get murky. Generally, they're on the player side and will defend, especially if they do investigations. So it's a little bit tougher for me to kind of agree with it once they jump on. But it's hard for me to say, how many times did he get drug tested?
I mean, he don't know, and he's exaggerating. Look, man, Eric Reed wants us to care about him. That's why I was very reluctant. I kept saying, don't put this story in because I don't want to tell the truth about Eric Reed. But he's a tension star. And, you know, now he's been called out. Everything's about attention. He wants to be a victim. He wants attention. Don't know about the NFL don't care enough about Eric Reed to be extra drug testing him. Make a tackle.
He ain't balling like that with Lock.
No.
No.
Oh, what's
man.
Next?
Goodell got $44 million. You be like, man,
come on.
Shut up, Eric Reed. Oh, man. It ain't that serious.
Right.
No, it's not.
All right, man. Let's talk Ohio State for my guy Jim here.
Oh, here we go.
Where Dwayne Haskins decides to enter the NFL draft and is already generating a lot of buzz as a top pick. Haskins, who's originally from New Jersey, made it pretty clear what team he wants to play for, posting a Photoshop of him in a Giants uniform on Twitter and Instagram, teasing, don't let me go back to the crib, and tagging OBJ and Saquon Barkley. We know Haskins doesn't really have control over where he goes, but do you like him campaigning to play for his hometown team?
I say be careful what you wish for. I went through this with my man Jeff George. Desperately wanted to come home and play in Indianapolis, and that's a burden, man. You got family, friends, pretend friends, and all this hype and pressure. It's a burden. Sometimes you need to get away from home, get away from the nest. Dwayne Haskins, bright future. Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, I played as close as I could to the crib when LA didn't have a team in San Diego. Look, you can handle the crib and the family and the ticket requests and the third grade friends and the ex-girlfriend from high school. You can handle all that in different doses. But the problem is, perception is also reality. So when things go dry or things, you're a rookie and you're going up and down, that perception is, oh, he's back home. Oh, he's out there doing too much. Mm-hmm. Even though that may not be the reality, be careful. My words of wisdom is don't root to go back home because you may do it the right way, but it still doesn't look right to everyone
else. My man D, go back home, bro. Go back home and have fun and tell everybody, listen, this is how I get down because I figure this. I know it's tough. D Rose did it when he went back to Chicago. I briefly went back and went to Cleveland, but I was older, okay? Where's his maturity level? Who's behind him? His background has been pretty good in regards to who he is as a young man.
True.
So if he can handle that part of it, then he'll be fine. Now, it is added pressure, no doubt. Stop it, man. It is.
Now, Jimmy, you know what?
I'm supporting my man. Go back home.
I love it.
Go back home and show him how we do at OSU that we handle all of that.
You know, I love what you said. Yeah. You're right, except this.
What?
Because he's putting these tweets out already, it's showing me he's not handling it perfectly. Even so before it even gets there.
He's telling the team.
Like, you wouldn't do this.
He's telling the team, don't grab me. I want to go
break some
do
news
this. What?
Had you gone to Michigan instead of Ohio State, you would have been a much better player.
Why
you
say
had left
that?
Home and gone to Michigan and went to a real school.
A real
other
school.
Than Ohio State.
Real school.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for Cliff Kingsbury. Smokey and the Bandits, Smokey, Forest Rangers, Smokey, what is this?
Well, first of all, nephew, if you knew your history, you would know that I'm one of the surviving members of the Canadian Colored Guard.
That's not the name of y'all.
I said I'm the only surviving one. How the hell are you going to tell me what the hell am I? I'm trying to like you now.
My wife is Canadian, and I ain't never heard of no Canadian guard.
This ain't no no colored people. That's what the hell wrong with you.
All right, let's get to a highlight. The only one. Let's get to a highlight from our discussion earlier about Cliff Kingsbury.
The NFC West has gone Hollywood. McVay, Kingsbury, and San Francisco head coach Kyle Shanahan are the new Rat Pack or Brat Pack.
Seven of the eight coaches remaining in the playoffs right now are offensive-minded, and half of them are former quarterbacks like Cliff Kingsbury. They all are cut from the same cloth, and you can't argue with those results. You can't argue with that success. I support this hire, and I think it's going to work.
Marcel, I'm still blown away you support this hire, Marcel. They're hiring based on looks.
Hey, looks can be deceiving or achieving.
Uncle Jimmy, what's your take?
Well, I mean, hey, we know how I got the job.
You ain't lying. What's your take, man?
Well, you know, Jason, I heard you refer to them. You called them the Rat Pack, yeah. The Brat Pack or whatever. It kind of reminded me of one of the nicknames that some of my homies used to describe my five ex-wives. Called them the Fat Pack.
The what?
Fat Pack.
The what?
That ain't right.
The Fat Pack.
Boom Boom Belinda's. What you dealing with?
The hell you laughing at, man? What's so funny?
I'm part of the Fat Pack. I guess that's why. Go ahead.
I mean, I'm just saying, man, everybody, you know, you make fun of it, you laugh about it, man. I'm not insulted, you know. Ain't no shame to my game. Mm. You know, see, what happens is, man, you know, first of all, the Bible tells you, you don't judge a man by the strength of his arms. You judge him by the gray in his head. You see what I'm saying? Therefore, the Bible teaches me and tells me that what a man don't understand, then that's what he gonna talk about and that's what he gonna disrespect.
Ooh.
Going deep. You see what I'm saying?
Going deep on you with it.
So what I'm trying to tell you is, man, you
wow.
You don't know, you sound jealous of McVay.
Mm.
You sound jealous.
Ooh, shaka laka laka.
Of Kingsbury.
Mm. I sound jealous. Get out of here. I sound jealous.
A little bit.
You sound jealous. You're jealous of their good looks. Mm. It's something that you've never had. It's something that you never will.
Check.
You know, good looks, the love of a woman who can go toe-to-toe with you,
check.
Hot wing for hot wing at a Las Vegas buffet. And now you want to sit up here and knock what you don't know nothing about? And, I mean, if I'm going to be 100, that's... Where the camera at? That's what drives me crazy about your boy Charles Barkley.
Oh, what about
you? He always making fun of big women.
That's
you know
true.
What I'm saying? I always talk about Kenny, they too big. They come in my house, they fall through the linoleum, Kenny. He can't handle the heat. He needs to stay the hell up out the kitchen. You know, everybody ain't built for that kind of fire. They ain't about that life. Uncle Jimmy about that life.
Smokey?
You know, that's why they call me the notorious B.I. Jimmy. You understand me? I'll tell you in a minute. Believe me, sweetie, I got enough to feed the greedy. See, you and Barkley both telling on yourself. See, it's just about keeping it real.
Jimmy. Boy, he decoded the hell out of that. He got you on your heels.
I'm going to my approval ready, man. I'm not messing with that.
We're sweating up here.
We are. I got Cliff
Kingsbury. Like a hoe in church.
It's been a long time since I've given out a dumpster fire.
Oh.
Kingsbury is a dumpster fire. I got him at a 34. Job performance at a 6. He just got fired at Texas Tech, where everybody's successful. All-time greatness a 2.
Remember. Mm.
Character, I'll give him a 16. I ain't going to go all the way. But authenticity, you just took a job at USC and walked away from it within 2 weeks. No authenticity, a 10. 34 overall, dumpster fire.
Oh, man, I think of him much higher than that. Look,
really?
He's a role player to me, bottom line role player. I got to see what he's going to do when he gets there. But if you give me the proposal, fire me at Texas Tech and I'll be the head coach of the Cardinals. Yes, please. So I take that. He touched,
He touched the football Jesus in Patrick Mahomes' garment. And he made Patrick Mahomes who Patrick Mahomes was.
Patrick Mahomes' is daddy and mama made Patrick Mahomes who he is.
Yeah, that should be a category in this. Because if you look at him, he's a pretty good-looking dude. Yeah.
That guy. And no more gangster than a guy who's like USC.
How you going to give him a 25 authenticity, Marcellus?
Fight on.